Hello, Spokane, and welcome to this week's episode of Church and State, where we strive to plug you into the pew and plug you into politics. Wait a minute, that's not right. I'm on autopilot. Let's try that again. Good afternoon, and welcome to Patriot Radio. I'm your host, Caleb Collier, for this episode. I will attempt to do Matt Shea some justice here, but those are some large shoes to fill. For those of you that don't know, as I said, my name is Caleb Collier. I'm a former Marine, Matt's former soldier, but we don't hold that against him. I also did 7 years with the local ambulance company doing EMS in Spokane County. I'm a former city councilman for Spokane Valley, and I host my own radio show called Church and State, as I mentioned earlier. I thought I'd start this show by promoting Matt, because he's too humble to do something like that. I think the Spokane audience, and really the Eastern Washington greater audience, should understand what a treasure Matt is to us. This is a man that really gives to the community. He is a public servant in the truest sense. He understands that his treasures are not on earth, but he's building them in heaven. Matt defends God's natural laws, among those life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. He is a patriot in the truest sense of the word, and not a sunshine type. This man digs in, and he works hard. He's a man that would never want his friends to talk like this about him, because in his mind, he's just doing his duty. He's defending liberty. But a politician's work is often a thankless job. And so, Matt, I know you're not listening because you're busy at the moment, but we salute you and we appreciate how hard you work, not only for this community, but for Christians everywhere. With that being said, let's go ahead and do what Matt always does and break down some news. So starting out with the international. And what do you know? The first time in, what, a century? France has won a World Cup. And I don't mean in the first time in a century France has won a World Cup. I mean France has won something. And for those of you that are French, I'm sorry. I had to tease a little bit. But they did. They won. And apparently if you're into sports, that's a big deal. Also in international news, and this one is a rather frightening story. GMO babies have been given the go-ahead by the UK ethics body. The Guardian is reporting that the Newfield Council on Bioethics said that changing the DNA of a human embryo could be morally permissible if it was the future child's interests and did not add to the kinds of inequalities that already divide society. This is a very, very scary story coming out of the UK, that UK scientists now believe that they can play God. I think the audience understands how terrifying the results could potentially be here. It's a controversial subject, one that, well, I believe that God has provided borders, ones that we are not supposed to breach as humans. This is getting very dangerous. The most, it continues on, it says, British researchers found that the most popular tool for genome editing, CRISPR-Cas9, caused more damage to DNA than previously thought. It also is passed on to future generations. If we allow something like this to occur, we could potentially change human DNA. And I don't think God would take too kindly on that. I think we could usher in God's wrath if we pursue something like this. On the national news, we have Democratic Socialist Ocasio-Cortez. And this is coming at us from Drudge Report. Now this woman, she just recently really put the DNC kind of in a tailspin, because she was able to actually remove an individual who had been something like a 10-term congressman, And this woman, and I'll give her credit, she went out and she doorbelled. She did a grassroots effort, second to none. But she is a socialist, and she's an unapologetic socialist. And she was interviewed on PBS's Firing Line, interviewed by a woman named Margaret Hoover. And she asked a few softball questions, nothing too big. But she did finally ask her an interesting question. She asked her her thoughts on capitalism. She said, "Do you think capitalism has failed to deliver for working class Americans?" And she cited the fact that this Hoover individual cited that the current economy in the U.S. is booming and there's low unemployment. But this socialist said unemployment is low because everyone has two jobs. She laments that people are employed but having to work long hours. And she goes on to say capitalism has not always existed in the world and will not always exist in the world. Later in the interview, Ocasio-Cortez was asked if she thinks capitalism would survive as an economic system. She shrugged and said, "That was a good question," and believes our economy will evolve. Evolve into what exactly is my question. This woman is a socialist. She's straightforward in that, and I can at least appreciate that. Too often politicians hide behind the curtain. But I think she's missing the mark. You see, the United States is built on the premise of individualism, rugged individualism, capitalism, the idea that you can get ahead in life through your own merit, through your own struggles, that you can be successful when you do hard work. And that's against socialism. So her ideology is in direct conflict with these precious United States. And I think we need to be careful. Now, granted, this is in New York, but this can spread. Socialism is a disease. It is a cancer. It can most certainly spread into Washington State. I think most of you already know that. All you have to do is look at the West Side. Another thing that this Ocasio-Cortez said, she said that Israel was occupiers of the Palestinian land. And when she was pushed on the comment, she mumbled, and it ultimately admitted that she does not know anything on the issue. Well, perhaps you shouldn't say anything then. But this is a mindset that is becoming more and more prevalent amongst the left, and even infiltrating some of the right. And it's a dangerous one, because Israel is our friend, and we need to stand by Israel. And we need to understand that if Israel goes, so goes the world. We need to be very careful allowing the idea that they are occupiers to infiltrate our system. Also in the national news, CNN analyst and former CIA intelligence official Philip Mudd wondered aloud Monday when a shadow government will emerge to oppose Trump. Well, Philip Mudd, your name is Mudd indeed. And I'm really actually surprised at this one. I'm surprised that they would openly suggest that a shadow government needs to emerge to take on Trump. Now, for you, for those of you who know me or listen to my show, you know that I am not always the biggest Trump supporter and I question a lot of his actions. But the idea that a shadow government controls this nation, well, that should anger every individual listening. Because we are a government of the people. We, the people, we have the power. And our amendments guarantee this. So the idea that this elite group, this shadow organization, would come in and ultimately decide which way this country is going, we need to kick these bums out. And I will applaud Trump if he does indeed drain this swamp. Because these people need to go. They don't know better than us. We know better than them. Our founders ensured that. Also in the national news, Chicago could soon test universal income. What an idea. Now, they're not the first city to suggest doing something like this, but they're certainly the largest. Stockton, California has also discussed universal income, and they're testing this. And the idea would be to get a certain amount of individuals, and the number would be, let's see here, 100 residents, 500 a month without any condition. This is the one in Stockton. The program's purpose is to eventually ensure that no one in Stockton with a population of 300,000 lives in poverty. Well, the first question one needs to ask is, where does this money come from? I understand that it's fiat currency, but still, the taxpayers are ultimately picking up this bill. So you could potentially, if you live in Stockton or perhaps Chicago here, you could potentially be paying for someone to not work, to sit on their couch, watch television, eat free food, $500 a month. Once again, we're looking at socialism infiltrating these United States. We can't allow this. We need to stand firm on this. We have to attack an idea like this and expose it for exactly what it is. This is un-American. All this will do is ensure that liberal progressives have the votes they need to stay in power. Because when you give away free things like this, you're guaranteed to stay in power. That's the model. That's the direction we are seeing in this country. Is that socialism has taken root. Communism has taken root. And we got to dig these things out. We got to do so quickly. Think of your lawn, your beautiful green lawn, and what happens when you get weeds in it. Dandelions, that's the great example. And your little kid blows it and you're running at him, no! Because you know that's going to spread them everywhere. That's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing with these leftist ideologies. And we got to get them, guys. You got to get involved. Continuing on national news, and we better move a little bit quicker here. CNN is upset that InfoWars is still on Facebook. Well, CNN, we don't really care what you think. Now, granted, InfoWars is not always the most trustworthy news site, but they have a lot of good stuff. They have a lot of good content. And to think that CNN, a media organization, a dying media organization, would tell Facebook, its own private company, that they want InfoWars removed, well, there's your violation of the First Amendment. In regional news, Seattle has banned plastic straws. I'm sure the audience is largely aware of this. But it's an interesting thing. They've removed these straws in order to curb climate change, in order to reduce the amount of plastic that are spilling over into our landfills. But this has resulted in plastic lids that require more plastic to create than the original product. That's amazing. Only government can do something like that. So they've had to create these new lids, and there's more plastic in them than the original product. But we also have unintended victims in this. And here's what's interesting. This needless governmental policy, turns out, has affected the disabled. Many of the disabled, not all, but many. Because many of these people, they need straws in order to enjoy a beverage. And because of some government policy, some needless government policy, we now have victims. So good job, Seattle. Good job, Seattle. You've taken away people's straws. Instead, you've given them safe injection sites where anybody can do opium, heroin, morphine, whatever they want. But make sure they're safe. Make sure they don't OD. Good job, Seattle. You've made it to where the homeless can camp out all over your city. So badly that your tourism is being affected. People don't want to go downtown in your city, your Emerald City. You people need to wake up. You need to wake up and realize that the American public is not going to stand for this for too long. That when they go outside of their home, their property, and they have someone sleeping on the ground, with a needle in their arm, that they're going to vote you out. I understand that you think that you're trying to help people, that government is the solution, but you're wrong. You're dead wrong. And you have two choices. You either wake up and change and return back to the constitutional republic that we once had, or we will vote you out. And I hope you're listening. In the local news, we have an event coming up here in Spokane. It's going to be at the Moran Prairie Library. And this has been promoted by Rob Chase. And we'll talk about Rob Chase in just a minute. But it's going to be on the Hydro One Avista Sail. And it's going to be a long event. It's going to be from 8 to 8. But for those of you that can attend, it's this Saturday. And it's really going to open up the door to discussion about what this does, how bad this really is for our community. I wish I could attend, but unfortunately I'll be traveling to the occupied state of California. But I hope that many of you in the audience will go to this event, even for a few hours, just to learn a few things, and just to show this community that we oppose the sale of Avista to a Canadian corporation. Also in local news, We Believe We Vote has come out with their recommendations for this primary election cycle. And for a lot of this, these people are going to move on. But for some of them, they will not. You know, they have gone through and they've looked at the Senate race against Maria Cantwell. And the individual, just switched on me, but the individual that is being promoted is not actually the Republicans' choice. So that's something that we definitely want to look at, but the name is eluding me currently. We do have Matt Shea is obviously recommended, and he's highly aligned with We Believe We Vote. Highly aligned, I believe, would be the five-star. That was last year, there were five stars. But his opponent is not recommended, supports abortion, and rejects the Electoral College. Now, there's a dangerous one we should really be wary of. Bob McCaslin has also been endorsed. Jeff Holy, Mike Volz. You know, there's no real surprise on some of these. Now, I will say there are a few that I don't necessarily agree with. And I think the biggest one here, in my opinion, is the county assessor. We have Leonard Christian is highly aligned with We Believe We Vote, with Tom Conis mostly aligned with We Believe We Vote. In my opinion, I know Tom Conis. I am supporting Tom. I'm doorbelling for Tom, and I believe that he is the best man for the job. Also, we have a tie with the county commissioner, District 2, a tie between Rob Chase and Mary Cooney. Rob Chase is mostly aligned with We Believe We Vote. Mary Cooney, mostly aligned with We Believe We Vote. I've known Rob Chase for quite some time, and I find him to be one of the most genuine men I have ever met. I call him a friend. I'm supporting him. I'm doorbelling for him. He did a phenomenal job as our treasurer. He gave himself term limits. He said he'd only run twice. True to form, he's only running twice. He's enacted policies that have made it possible for individuals to stay in their homes, even when they owe back taxes, to where they can pay any amount at any time and still retain their property, which, don't get me started on property taxes anyway, terrible. But still, Rob Chase has been a servant of the public, a servant of the people. So I would definitely suggest that we endorse Rob Chase, that we become motivated to support this man, because this is one of the more important races in Spokane County. If we can get a man like Rob Chase on the county commissioners, you can see real change for limited government. All right, with that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest. Our guest is a man by the name of John Guandolo. And he was actually here in Spokane and he spoke at Covenant Church, the church that I actually attend. And it was an incredible speech. It was so incredible. He spoke on a Saturday, and our pastor was in attendance. And it was so incredible that the pastor actually asked him to come and speak at both services Sunday morning. And John agreed. And so he was able to preach to the congregation, and it went extremely well. John is the president and founder of Understanding the Threat, the only organization in the nation which provides a detailed assessment of the enemy threat in your local area, provides law enforcement investigative solutions, creates state-level counterinsurgency strategies to identify, dismantle, and defeat the jihadi network in your area. He is the author of the book, Raising a Jihadi Generation. And that book can be purchased at understandingthethreat.com or amazon.com. John also has a television show, which can be found at www.wvwtv.com. With that being said, let's go ahead and bring John on. John, are you with us?
John presently has his voicemail on, Gabe.
Oh, okay.
And Caleb. So go ahead and plug your show again.
All right. Well, hopefully we can get John on the phone here soon. As he just said, the show that I actually do is called Church and State. And you can find that show Fridays at 12:30 p.m. and Saturdays at 8:30 a.m. It airs at 6:30 a.m. or 96.5 FM. And I partnered with my best friend, Gabe Blomgren, who's a pastor. Me being a former politician, him being a pastor, he brings the church, I bring the state.
Okay, your guest is ready.
All right, here we go. John, can you hear me?
I certainly can.
Well, this is Caleb Collier. Met you when you were in here, Spokane. You remember me?
I sure do.
All right, excellent. Well, I got to say, that was such an enjoyable experience having you come to Spokane and really just open the eyes of so many of the public as to what this Islamic threat really is.
Well, I think what I noticed from people that were there at the event is their shock at not only the real threat that exists, but how grossly ignorant most people are because of it, you know, because of the lack of understanding and that it's much, much worse than people thought it could be.
And you're not some geek off the street. You have the credentials to back up your statements. You're a former counterterrorism expert with the FBI, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And you're also a former Marine as well.
Well, I'm a Marine. We never say we're former Marine.
There we go. Well, Semper Fi.
Thank you.
But yes, you've got quite a bit of experience under your belt, and you understand the enemy. And I think too many Americans don't understand the enemy. They don't understand the threat that is Islam, and they don't understand that Islam is playing the long game, that they're not going to invade the United States as an army, but they're going to infiltrate. And by the time we wake up to it, there'll be too many for us to do anything. And that's the example that they're doing in Europe.
Right. I mean, what we're seeing in Europe is a great prelude to what has already begun here. They're very well along here in the United States. It's just much worse in Europe, where you have nations in Europe that are that have been lost. And if they recover, it's going to require a number of decades for them to recoup what's already been lost. And that's something most Americans, I don't think, realize either, is that you've got countries, including the UK, that are likely to fall in the next several years. And that, I think, is the fact that in the next decade you're going to see European nations fall to Islam is something that most people can't even wrap their hands around, you know what I mean?
Can you give us a timeline? Take a few countries. You mentioned the UK. Let's also put France in there, maybe the Netherlands. When do you suspect that these nations will actually fall to Islam?
Well, one of the things about Islam that's important to understand is the way they operate is based on kind of the ground status. So once certain milestones have been achieved in certain countries, then they will move to the next milestone and the next one. And, of course, the goal is establishing an Islamic State under Sharia. That's the purpose of Islam. That's the goal of what the movement is doing in each country. And each country is a little different. So in each country, they're dealing with different laws, different governments, different attitudes, different numbers of jihadis, and how they're operating, different number of Islamic organizations that are working in the jihadi movement. So as each country moves along, there's not a perfect timeline, but there's a window. And what's interesting is about 15 years ago, a military commander for Al-Qaeda gave an interview in Der Spiegel and gave a general timeline of the movement. And everything he projected out through and past 2020 has basically come to fruition in the 2 or 3 year window that he said was their general timeline. And 2020 is their timeline for seizing power. 2020 and beyond is the beginning of them seizing power. And what you're going to see in the near future is the Islamic world under the Organization of Islamic Conference, which is the largest voting bloc in the UN. It's the 57 Muslim states in the world as an official political body. You're going to see the caliphate established under that, because right now that is operating essentially as a pseudo-caliphate, if you will, with Turkey at the lead and Erdogan, the leader of Turkey, positioning himself to be the caliph. I think it's reasonable to say in the next couple few years, they're going to declare the caliphate. Now, once they do that, you're going to see real conflict in these European nations, the ones that are teetering and the ones that are pretty much gone anyway. And I think once you start seeing that, the response from the United States is going to be key. And I think they have neutered us over the last 15 to 17 years that unless this president takes some very significant action, we will do what they want us to do, which is basically not get involved. And then once they get a big swath of Europe, they're going to turn towards the United States, Canada, and countries like that. So us, we will be there, you know, obviously the golden goose, but I mean, everything else is going to come down prior to that in Europe.
It's really a terrifying idea to believe that we could, in just a few short years, watch one European country after another fall to Islam. And there will be countries that will stand firm, the Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary, that will stand and attempt to fight this. But when they're surrounded by an enemy such as this, it will be a hard task. And I believe you're correct. If the United States does not act aggressively when something like this occurs, God help us. We're going to be in a lot of trouble here. Now, you mentioned Sharia law, and I don't know if everyone listening is truly familiar with Sharia law. Has really taken the time to read the Quran. And during the presentation that you gave, you addressed a number of issues in the Quran that really prove that this constitutional republic that we have cannot coexist with Islam. Can you go ahead and address that?
I'll do it as briefly as I'm able. I think it's important for people to understand that whether we're talking about Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Hezbollah, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, Abu Sayyaf, pick the jihadi group, the Muslim Brotherhood, Tablighi Jamaat, or all of the jihadis, including the 9/11 hijackers that we have killed or captured on the battlefields of Afghanistan, Iraq, Philippines, Africa, or in Europe or the United States since 9/11. It's important to know they all say they identify themselves as Muslims waging jihad to establish an Islamic state under Sharia, Islamic law. Now, Sharia is Islam. That's what it's the thing that all Muslims are obligated under penalty of death to obey. And let me be very brief about this. Sharia comes from the Quran, which, according to Muslims, is the uncreated word of Allah. Every word in the Quran comes from Allah directly. And the example of the Prophet Muhammad. The Quran must be understood. A couple things have to be understood. Number one, that what comes chronologically last in the Quran legally overrules what came before it when there's a conflict. So the last chapter in the Quran to discuss jihad obliges Muslims to force pagans to either be killed or convert, and Jews, Christians have the opportunity to submit to Islamic law, pay the non-Muslim poll tax, and live under the Islamic State. The obligation of all Islam, under all Islamic law, under all different schools of Islamic thought, oblige warfare against non-Muslim till the entire world is under Sharia, Islamic law. And we see the greatest way to explain this is simply through the example of the Prophet Muhammad. The Quran, in several places, calls him a perfect example for all people to follow. He is a, quote, beautiful conduct of pattern for all Muslims for all times. And so when we see historically and in authoritative Islamic history and doctrine that Muhammad tortured, he beheaded, he approved the killing of people that mocked him, he approved stoning to death adulterers. He waged war on non-Muslims when they did not submit to Islam or convert. All these things we see him do. He allowed for the taking of sex slaves for non-Muslims as spoils of battle. The Quran says, whatever your right hand possesses. And so all of what we see the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda doing are lawful. They're simply the armies of Muhammad, following the example of their prophet, and it's all recorded in their history. It's okay for a 60-year-old, you know, Jordanian man to marry a 9-year-old girl because Muhammad married a 6-year-old and consummated the relationship when she was 9. So these things are all lawful. They're not from an Islamic perspective. They're simply good Islamic behavior. The fact that 17 years after 9/11, we still have people saying Islam is peace and Islam doesn't tolerate ISIS. So this it's utter junk. I mean, it's just simply not true, and there's no basis in fact for it. Now, and here's the thing for your listeners who are scratching their heads saying it can't be this simple. Here's the question I ask. When people say, you know, there are many versions of Islam, and, you know, what you're talking about is an extreme version, then I would ask, why is what I'm saying taught in nearly every single Islamic school on the planet? And why is it taught at the highest schools of Islamic jurisprudence where they train imams and Islamic scholars? Why do they teach 10-year-olds in Islamic schools in Spokane, Washington, in Dallas, Texas, in Los Angeles, in Toronto, Canada, in Mexico City, in Dubai, what ISIS and Al-Qaeda say are requirements of Islam? And the answer is because there's only one Islam and there's only one Sharia. And until we actually kind of pull our heads out of our backside and decide to live, you know, turn off you know, the TV for a minute and actually live in reality for 10 minutes, and you realize this stuff is very simple, it's very plain, very dangerous, that 17 years after 9/11, our leaders are still making comments that are absolutely nonsensical and catastrophically, demonstrate, quite frankly, they're catastrophically clueless.
One of the things that you had brought up during your speech was that for Islam, it's acceptable for its adherents to lie to Christians and Jews in order to promote Islam. And so when you hear somebody say that Islam is a religion of peace, and they quote this imam or whoever, the reality is they're lying.
Well, the short answer is yes. Here's a good rule to remember, is that anything that benefits Islam is lawful. That's a good rule of thumb to keep in mind anytime you're discussing this issue. that is backed up in good Sharia. So Islamic law, and I do encourage your listeners, if you're going to decide to study, I would, you know, don't spend the time studying the Hadith and the Quran, but just pick up a book of Islamic law. Go to a mosque bookstore, pay cash, buy one book of Islamic law and read it, or buy 10, and you'll realize they all say the exact same thing, and you'll go through the process that I and my colleagues have gone through, which is you buy books of Islamic law, and you'll say, hey, I must have gotten the radical ones. And then you go buy a few more, and you realize, oh, I keep buying the radical ones. And after a while, when you buy different books from different countries, from different centuries, and you realize, oh, they all say the same thing, which is exactly what they say in these fifth grade, seventh grade textbooks. And the textbooks, not only in the United States, but from Canada, the United, you know, Europe, the Middle East, they all say the same thing. And when it comes to lying, specifically Islamic law says that, quote, speaking is a means to achieve an objective. That the Prophet Muhammad, the perfect example, said war is deceit, and that it's absolutely okay to lie to non-Muslims, and it's obligatory to lie to them if it advances Islam, or the goal is obligatory, which is why Islamic law reads it's permissible to lie when the goal is permissible and obligatory to lie if the goal is obligatory. Islam believes if you can achieve an objective without lying, then don't lie. But if you have to lie to achieve the objective, then lie. And there's no problem as long as you're talking to a non-Muslim. And so when we don't understand that, but let me say it the other way. When we do understand that, then we see these examples, like when 500 imams go on international news, you know, CNN or, you know, Fox News or one of these channels, and they all say after the London Bridge bombing, you know, we condemn this act of terrorism. And these we're so appalled at these London Bridge killers that we're not going to pray the funeral prayers over them. And everybody applauds, and the media falls all over themselves saying, oh, see, Islam's so awesome. And, you know, I saw that and wrote an article and said, well, of course they're not going to pray the funeral prayers over them. They're not allowed to. It's unlawful for imams to pray, or anybody to pray, the obligatory funeral prayers that most Muslims have prayed over them when they die, because those guys at the London Bridge are martyrs. They're Muslims who died in jihad, and you're not allowed, it's unlawful to pray that prayer over them because they're martyrs. They don't require the prayers. They automatically go to paradise. They're with Allah, according to Islam, that moment that they die, unlike all other Muslims who have to go through this long, painful process and are never quite sure if they're going to paradise. A martyr is the only one guaranteed not only go to paradise, but to get the highest level of paradise of all other Muslims. And so you're not allowed to pray the prayers. So what these 500 imams did in the UK when they made this big statement is they literally flipped the bird to the entire international world, knowing that nobody would open a book of Islamic law and realize, oh, look, they can't do this. So this is just a stunt.
It truly is. My people perish for lack of knowledge. We don't understand Islam, and so we just willingly accept what these people are telling us, and they're able to lie to us. It's really silly that the Americans are so willing to just bend over backwards to accept a religion that is going to undo what we have. And something that really surprises me is how many leftists, the radical left, how they promote and accept Islam, and especially within the homosexual community, when in reality they don't understand that they'll be some of the first to die.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because two points I want to make. I think there's a confusion among a lot of us on this issue, because number one, yes, it is in Islamic law, homosexuals are killed. Just like an apostate, it's obligatory for Muslims to explain to them what they're doing, and then they're supposed to be given an opportunity to stop their behavior. And if they do, you give them the there's an opportunity for them not to be killed. Otherwise, they're killed. That's the first thing. The second thing is when we see these groups, these LGBT homosexual groups marching with jihadi organizations in the Europe and the UK, we call them suit-wearing jihadis. These groups purport to be friendly, and they wear suits, and they look nice, but they're Muslim Brotherhood, and they have the same objective as ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Those are Marxist groups. As a matter of fact, if you look, we use many, many videos and photographs of these rallies, and you see it. You'll see these signs, literally thousands of printed, expensive signs that say things like LGBT community stands with Muslim refugees, and it, in, you know, smaller print along the bottom of the sign, it says socialistworkers.org. Or, you know, fill in the blank. One of these Marxist organizations, the Black Lives Matter, the Antifa, Socialist Worker Party, Freedom Road Socialist Organization, Code Pink, Answer. And what I would say is we have talked to people, I have talked to people, my organization, Understanding the Threat, we talk to people in the homosexual community, individuals, lesbians and homosexuals, are not supportive of the Islamic movement. Many of them that actually take the time to learn about the threat are scared to death. These groups, these big groups that put on the, you know, the coat of we represent homosexuals and lesbians are actually Marxist-funded organizations. And they're just like, you know, the feminist movement, the National Organization of Women. They don't care about women's rights. They care about socialist Marxist agenda. And that's the same. And so all of that has to get taken into to account here.
John, is it a means to an end there? Is that why we're seeing the merging of radical leftist ideology and Islam? Because the two also eventually will come to battle. Because ultimately Islam will want to take control, and the left despises religion. So is that what we're seeing? Is just the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and so they're taking on conservatives, Christians, the West in general?
My short answer to that is, and we've done some more detailed written assessments and some longer assessments on this, but short end is both the Marxist movement and the jihadi movement want governments that support liberty destroyed. And so they feel they can work together. Now, the difference is, at the end of the day, my experience with the jihadis, both on the battlefield and on the streets and in the office space, when I've met with scholars and Muslim brothers that we've arrested and things like that, they are going to crush the Marxists because those people aren't even sure which bathroom to use and don't even know what gender they are. If you watch how on the street, and I'm not being facetious, if you watch out on the street how the Antifa people, as soon as they get confronted by veterans or citizens that don't put up with their crud, and they get a punch in the face, they go running away crying, wanting to know why they got hit after, the Antifa people just, smacked somebody with a 2x4, sprayed him in the face with pepper spray. You know, citizens don't like that and defend themselves. I just think in the end, just like the brown shirts in Hitler's Germany, were executed in the Night of the Long Knives. The Marxists, when they've served their end for the jihadi movement, the plan is they'll be the first to go, and that's the way this works. I just think Americans have a hard time digesting that all of this is coming down, and so we're watching years go by as Americans, like in their psyche, are digesting, like, this is really happening. And I don't know. Well, I have my thoughts on why that's happening, I think. But it is happening, that people are having a hard time digesting it.
And it's happening closer to home than people believe.
That's correct.
One of the
things happening in neighborhoods all over the United States.
All around this country. One of the things that I wanted to make sure that I brought up with you was, obviously our audience is largely based in Spokane. So who owns the Spokane Valley Mosque? Can you trace that back for us?
Sure. I mean, we talked about this. The Islamic Center of Spokane is owned by the North American Islamic Trust. And the North American Islamic Trust was identified not only by Muslim Brotherhood documents discovered by the FBI in a 2004 raid. NAIT, the North American Islamic Trust, is the bank for the Muslim Brotherhood that directly funds, or certainly we know funded, Hamas organizations and Hamas leaders overseas. And they own numerous Islamic centers and Islamic societies across the United States as a part of the Muslim Brotherhood movement. And they own the Islamic Center of Spokane. And there is probable cause right now as we're on this phone for law enforcement to get a search warrant to go search them. And but what they need to do is do basic investigative work and identify the key players. But you could arrest key leaders and shut that place down and seize their assets because they are conspiring to commit murder. They are conspiring to overthrow the state government of Washington and the federal government. All these are violations of the law. They are materially supporting terrorism. We know that the zakat that they collect, at least 1/8 goes towards jihad, which our legal system calls terrorism. So material support for terrorism. And there are probably a number of other charges you could slap on there. But nobody's investigating them right now, so I'm sure they monitor your radio show. So if they're listening, they can take a little reprieve at that. Certainly the FBI is not investigating them. They're probably actually working. I would put $100 out that the local FBI office is having lunch with their leaders on some regular or pseudo-regular basis. And therein lies the problem. So it's not a lack of evidence. It's a lack of understanding of the threat. It's a lack of courage and willpower and leadership to actually do what needs to be done to protect the citizens. And as we shared in that brief, this is why local police, local businesses, local pastors, and leaders in the community need to know this and begin formulating action plans to take back their cities and counties one at a time. Because certainly, if you're going to hold your breath and wait for the FBI to take care of you, you're going to find yourself in a worse and worse position as time goes on.
Which is something I spoke about in the beginning of the show, that rugged individualism that made America great is something we really need to grasp hold of again, that we cannot wait for the government to solve this problem, that we need to demand action ourselves. And so I encourage the audience to do something like that. I did get a question from a listener. It was just texted to me, and it's returning back to the European problem. So, John, when Muslims assume control of countries around the world, like the UK, how will that change life here in the USA?
Well, that depends on our leadership. I mean, I just, you know, you think about what happened in World War II. Europe was being overrun by the Nazis, and we didn't want to get involved. And until Pearl Harbor, and even after Pearl Harbor, but certainly Pearl Harbor got our attention, and we said, well, we're on a war footing. We're going to war against Japan. We didn't, you know, go to war against Germany initially. That wasn't the focus immediately. That wasn't the attention of the United States. And I think this all comes down to understanding the threat. And the American government and most European governments do not understand it. If you listen to the leaders and the key ambassadors or interior or defense ministers for the countries you named, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Poland, and now, we're working with some folks in Europe who are they're going to defend themselves. And when you look at Poland, who refuses to take any Muslim refugees in, look at the problems they have. Do you know what problems they have? They don't have any of these problems. The problem is Islam. That's the problem. And where you have Muslims who practice Islam, Sharia, you've got communities and countries in turmoil and being eroded from within, where countries like Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Poland have said, no, thank you. Not only no, but hell no. We're not letting them in because they are the problem. I mean, if you listen to the some of the leaders, I mean, they literally have said, we're a Christian nation. What they believe is they want to come in and overthrow our country. Why would we let anybody in whose doctrine commands them to overthrow non-Islamic governments? No, thank you. That's the kind of leadership the West needs. And so far, it's been unseen, with the exception of maybe Donald Trump and some of the new Italian leadership, and literally a few others, the Geert Wilders in the Netherlands, and literally a small number of men and women who are speaking out against us very boldly. You have a couple leaders in Austria speaking boldly about it, but it's staggering to me at how why this is so hard for people just to speak truth. It's just it doesn't, and I'm not trying to make a judgment call on people that aren't. I just don't understand it. It's not that hard. This is Islam is very simple to understand. It's not complicated, and the fact that they can make our leaders' head spin and not understand the threat, it boggles me.
And I would encourage the audience to not allow political correctness to dictate your thoughts on this. That we understand that this is a controversial subject, but it's one that needs to be told. Because the truth of the matter is you could one day wake up and you could be a slave in your own country. And remember that Thomas Jefferson famously said, I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery. Well, remember, you could potentially pay that poll tax, submit to Allah, live in relative peacefulness, I suppose. But what would you have? Where would your liberty be? Where would your God-ordained natural rights be? You wouldn't have those anymore. You would be subjected to Sharia law, and that is something that just doesn't work with my American psyche, and I know the same thing applies to you, John.
Well, I think you're nailing on the head, and I'd remind your listeners that the first war America fought after the Revolution was against Muslims.
You are, I remember my Marine history very well, yes. Well, I mean, honestly, for the audience, why don't you go ahead and tell us about that? Because too many Americans don't understand the history of that and really what occurred when Thomas Jefferson was president and how he had to address the Muslims.
Well, in 1786, when Thomas Jefferson and John Adams were ambassadors to England and France, they met with the ambassador to Britain from Tripoli. Sidi Raja, and they asked him, why are you attacking American civilian, you know, commercial ships on the high seas and taking Americans captive? And he said, he told them why, and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams wrote a letter to the Continental Congress, which the letter still exists today in the Library of Congress. You can look it up and read it. You know, a typed copy of it online, the National Archives. And they wrote in response, you know, this is what this guy said, that it is in their Quran, that it's obligatory for Muslims to wage war until we submit to Islam, and that any Muslim that dies in battle is sure to go to paradise. And Thomas Jefferson bought a London one of the first English translations of the Quran, published in London in 1649, I believe, 1647 maybe, and it says in the beginning, the very first two paragraphs, to the Christian reader, that we're translating this Quran so that you might better understand the enemy, so when you meet him on the battlefield, you'll defeat him. So there was no lack of clarity that Islam was an enemy of people who appreciated and loved liberty. And then when Thomas Jefferson became president, the first war we engaged in after the revolution was against the Muslims in Tripoli, and he sent the Marines in, and that is why our hymn says, you know, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli. That's it right there.
Absolutely.
It's part of our history. And by the way, that's why we have letters of marque in our Constitution, why we have a standing Navy. I mean, this is real stuff, that this real history. They were taking a huge percentage of our national gross product.
John, I hate to cut you off, but we're about at the 30-second mark, and I wanted to make sure that you were able to promote your website and anything else you wanted to do. So go ahead and do so right now, sir.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me. I encourage all your listeners to go to understandingthethreat.com and click the box that says sign up for our newsletter, and you'll have links there to our weekly 30-minute TV show online, 30-minute radio program. We have books and DVDs. We have a new 5-hour two DVD set coming out, all on Sharia. Absolutely fantastic stuff. We do it. If you sign up for the newsletter, we do 2 articles a week, and we have a bunch of resources on the website. Please bring us to speak to your churches, your civic groups, and especially consider sharing our 3-day law enforcement program that we do. It's the only one like it of its kind in the United States. And thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, John. We really appreciate it. You have a great day.
Thank you. Bless you, brother.
Bless you.